Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette dated for this date, Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. We'll begin by reading some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Urbana City Budget, Getting Her House in Order. Marlin's $45.9 million budget proposal includes cuts, separation incentives. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Urbana. Some projects that weren't finished at the end of Laurel Pressing's term will be put on hold until new mayor Diane Marlin passes a budget that heals financial instability from declining sales, the state budget impasse, and the Carle Foundation Hospital court case. Short-term strategies were used previously, Marlin said, about balancing city finances. We won't continue this practice because we're digging ourselves into a hole, quote-unquote. Marlin's strategy, laid out in a proposed $45.9 million budget released Monday, includes voluntary separation incentives for non-union employees and a 0.5% increase in the food and beverage tax. Greenlighting the budget is Marlin's highest priority before finding a new police chief to replace Pat Connolly or hiring a city administrator. The search for an administrator is gearing up and should take around 6 months, and Marlin said she'll have an update on the police chief position soon. Ideas that were kicked around by the city council before Marlin's swearing in, including hiring 3 new police officers, will most likely be tabled until the city regains stability, the mayor said. In what she calls a financial perspective shift, Marlin said her budget has a realistic view that can, quote-unquote, position ourselves for growth. Marlin noted that more cuts will be necessary in the future, but if no new debt is issued, the city could be debt-free by fiscal year 2023. By June 30th, the city's general corporate fund balance will be $1.2 million below the recommended $4.9 million of recurring general fund expenditures, according to a budget memo. Marlin said those reserves will have to be rebuilt over 2 years. City Finance Director Elizabeth Hannon said Urbana's general fund revenues have declined between fiscal years 2016 and 2017, mainly because of shrinking revenue from sales and income tax. She said that decline is probably largely because of internet-based sales, but that the decline isn't particular to Urbana and can be seen across the state. We're expecting sales tax revenues in the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th, to decrease by about 2.5% compared to the prior year, Hannon said. We're only expecting about 1% growth in fiscal year 2018. We must reduce staffing. Described by Marlin as one of the hardest parts of this budget, increasing the city's food and beverage tax on prepared food and beverage for immediate consumption will generate $390,000 annually. The increase takes the tax to a total 1.5%. The non-union voluntary separation incentive program is slated to begin early in the fiscal year, which starts July 1st. In her budget memo, Marlin called the program the first step in addressing our fiscal difficulties. Around 100 employees would be eligible to apply initially, but Marlin said there is no expectation to part with all of them. Since personnel costs are nearly 3/4 of our general operating fund expenditures, we must reduce staffing to achieve a sustainable budget, Marlin said in the memo. VSIP applications will be reviewed to determine whether the city can achieve meaningful savings through elimination of positions or restructuring with reduced staffing levels. Applications will be approved only if significant savings can be achieved without an unacceptable impact on core city services. At the same time, modest wage increases are being scheduled for union employees and some non-union employees. No wage increases are scheduled for department and division heads, management staff, or most professional employees. Before budgeting the city's general operating fund, which pays the bills for the city's daily operations, Marlin said she had the finance staff move Carle and Presence Covenant Medical Center's disputed property taxes to the general reserve fund for the first time since the Carle issue began years ago. That took the fund from $11.7 million to $3.8 million. As a result of this change, the unassigned fund balance in the general operating fund is reduced by the entire $5.26 million that is potentially payable to the hospitals, depending on the outcome of the lawsuit, Marlin said in the memo. It is not ours to spend at this time and should not be presented as such. The lawsuit over the disputed property taxes was sent back from the state Supreme Court to a circuit court this spring, and Marlin said a ruling won't be reached for more than a year. Responsibilities reshuffled among the cuts and adjustments proposed in the budget. Coming off the books $110,000 annually by not replacing the mayor's chief of staff, who plans to retire in early August. A city administrator will be reinstated, costing about $190,000, plus $28,000 in the first year for recruiting and other one-time expenses. The administrator will work to implement the mayor's and council's policies, boost economic development, professionally manage the city, and conduct long-term planning. Marlin said the position can enhance her role by letting her get out into the community more and spend more time on big-picture city issues. Reducing the Urbana Business Association's general fund by around half, bringing it to $14,000. Support from the city would continue with Urbana using TIF funds. Reducing social service funding by $25,000 for 1 year only. Discontinuing annual general operating fund expenditures of $15,000 for public arts programs. $130,000 would be provided for public arts by using TIF funds and the public arts fund balance. Reorganizing the Community Development Department after its director, Libby Tyler, retires June 30th, in order to save around $140,000 annually. Marlin said there won't be a formal replacement for Tyler, so those in the department will reshuffle responsibilities and take on new ones. Also, a vehicle would be eliminated from the department. Reducing costs for yard waste, leaf, and Christmas tree collection programs by $20,000 to fund the environmental manager position. Since Public Works hasn't yet gone out to bid for collection services, Hannon said she's not sure how many fewer pickups there will be. Reducing the mayor's budget for special counsel by $35,000 and allocating an additional $50,000 to the city's legal division. Eliminating other outside legal services would save $24,000 annually. Marlin said reducing dependence on outside counsel is a quote-unquote major goal. Reducing the mayor's travel budget by $5,000, Hannon said this will result in around two or three fewer trips. Eliminating a bucket or auger truck replacement for Public Works and returning the saved $100,000 to the general fund. Less cleaning of the city offices that aren't open to the public, saving around $5,000 annually. Hannon said the new amount of cleaning isn't finalized, but she believes it will be once or twice per week. Reducing funding for the annual employee safety luncheon by $6,000. And property tax revenue up. Marlin said the Illinois General Assembly, which has left the state without a full budget for almost 2 years, needs to help cities do our job by doing yours and passing a budget. The longer the state budget crisis goes on, the more likely they're going to lean on local governments to balance the state budget, Hannon said. Property tax revenues will increase by around $300,000 to $4.29 million after a 4.5% increase in assessed value, according to the budget memo. In response, $2 million of that will go to the police and fire pension funds, and $2.3 million will go toward city services. The Urbana Free Library would also receive around $3.1 million in property tax revenue that doesn't affect the general operating fund. And in a side column to this article, it's not all cuts. Here's what the city of Urbana plans to spend in the next fiscal year under its proposed budget. 1. Continuing with the $2.9 million Multimodal Corridor Enhancement, or MCOR, project to reconstruct Green Street between Lincoln Avenue and Wright Avenue. 2. $1.8 million for reconstructing Airport Road from Willow Road to Cunningham Avenue. 3. $1.05 million for resurfacing Lincoln from Green to University Avenue. 4. $560,000 for resurfacing Race Street from Washington Street to California Avenue. 5. $400,000 for resurfacing Vine Street between Main Street and University. 6. $390,000 for resurfacing Springfield Avenue from Gregory Street to Kohler Avenue. 7. $185,000 chipped in for constructing a shared-use path on the east side of Cunningham between Kenyon Road and Napleton Way. 8. $93,000 for upgrading ventilation systems and fire stations. 9. $75,000 for the first phase of the city facilities plan. 10. $65,000 for new parking management software and handheld enforcement devices. 11. $12,000 to repair an HVAC system and replace a water heater at fire station number 2. 12. $9,600 increase in the city's contribution to the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation. 13. $5,000 to participate in a study evaluating the formation of a Champaign County land bank. And 14. $1,200 increase in Metro squad fees. The next headline reads, Urbana Park District, Crystal cleared, Urbana's oldest, biggest park, and its namesake lake to undergo multi-million dollar makeover. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Urbana. It will take multiple years and multiple millions of dollars, but the Urbana Park District is ready to take on a major makeover of its oldest and largest property, Crystal Lake Park. And the focus will be on the unaptly named Crystal Lake, the 9-acre man-made body of water fed not by a spring or freshwater stream, but by about 160 acres of mostly urban North Urbana runoff. The first phase of a three-phase project, primarily improving the water quality, is almost finished. 4,000 cubic yards of sediment, about 650 dump trucks full, was taken out of the lake in 3 days in April. All of it was removed from a sediment basin that had been installed in the lake in 1985, intended to keep the urban runoff of gravel and other road particles on the lake. In some parts of the basin, there was as much as 8 to 12 feet of sediment, and Catlin Lill, a project manager for the park district who is overseeing, or said, Caitlin Lill, a project manager for the park district who is overseeing the Crystal Lake work. But in the parts of the lake outside of the basin, the sediment depth was only about 1 foot. Most of it is decaying leaves and goose droppings. There will also need to be a lot of maintenance on this lake since it isn't a natural system. There will always be human interference and management of it, Lill said. Our hope is that every time there's a large management project like right now or in the 1980s, that we'll be making improvements that will decrease the impact in the future. Other parts of the water quality work involve the installation of a water level control structure under Broadway Avenue that will make it much easier for the park district to lower the level of the lake, and a plan to eliminate and replace a popular water fountain also at the north end of the lake. Researchers found that part of the reason for the high phosphorus levels in the lake, which led to blooms of green watermeal and duckweed, wasn't just the urban runoff, but the water from the fountain. The fountain that people are so fond of is makeup water that fills in the lake during dry periods. It comes from the Glassford Aquifer, and it's a well below the fountain that goes about 200 feet down, Lill said. What we found is that shallow aquifers are high in phosphorus, so we're bringing our own phosphorus into the lake from our makeup water. The plan now is to remove the fountain, but continue to use the well water, trading the fountain for a naturalized stream corridor with wetland pools so that the water would have to go through native plants and filter the nutrients out before it went into the lake. We think that also would improve the water quality. Goose deterrent. Work on the second phase of the project, shoreline restoration, already has begun and will pick up next winter and spring. There are a lot of invasive species that are there now. Most of the shoreline is honeysuckle that is overgrown. People have described it as feeling claustrophobic. They don't feel safe in the park, and you can't really see the lake a lot of the time. So we're going to be removing a lot of the invasive trees and shrubs, and probably also decreasing the number of trees in general, and making sure that all the trees that are around the lake are quality, beneficial natives. About 90 trees and some shrub clusters along the lake will be preserved, she said, but for the most part, the sight lines of the lake will be opened up. I'm confident we'll install oak trees and some additional shrubs, but what we're really trying to do is grade the shorelines, getting rid of all the eroded banks and installing native plants and grasses. It would basically be a prairie along the shore of the lake that serves multiple purposes. One will be dealing with erosion so that the deep roots of native plants hold the soil in place. Another will be the introduction of prairie grasses that the park's Canada geese don't like. The native plant buffer is supposed to be a goose deterrent. It was recommended by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources that suggested a 70-foot plant buffer because the geese don't like to walk through tall grass, Lill said. We don't have 70 feet around the whole lake, but we think that maybe 15 to 20 feet would be a big help and would make a big difference. The prairie grasses will be tall enough to discourage geese, but not tall enough to interfere with the park's vistas, she said. And bridge work underway. Phase 3 of the project, which is the most expensive, involves a lot of capital improvements to the lake area, everything from new trails and pedestrian bridges to added electrification and landscaping. We want to do some rock outcropping that will get people down to the water to some lovely seating areas, Lill said. We want to restore and widen the pedestrian bridges because right now you couldn't get bicycle traffic on them safely. We want to add more infrastructure, lighting, and electricity, and upgrade the landscaping and the patios by the lake house built in 1987 on the south shore of the lake. The 2016 management plan for the lake estimated the entire cost of the project at about $5.4 million. For now, said Park District Executive Director Tim Bartlett, the agency will rely on its capital improvement budget to fund the project on a phased approach, but it hopes to obtain grants. And the president of the Park District's foundation, Steve Rugg, RUGG, said the group hopes to attract additional funds for a variety of specific projects from private donations. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of editor Jim Rosso. Lee Kabuti let me know that the News Gazette should have staffed Friday's popular Honors Day ceremony at Champaign Central High School, held on the court named after the legendary coach. That's Lee. There's a picture in the paper here with Centennial student Josh Jackson, one of several award winners. We salute the many Maroons honored Friday, as well as hundreds of other teens who have been or will be recognized for their contributions at the 40 high schools in our coverage area. There are some amazing stories to be told. Again this year, we'll photograph more than a dozen high school graduations, posting galleries at newsgazette.com. Our series kicked off Sunday at Unity and continues through June 2nd at Paxton Buckley Loda. And here's our online audience. What was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,122,934 page views. The three top stories. One, quote-unquote stupid plan, results in robbery, home invasion charges for three U of I football players. Two, woman stabbed in Champaign. Three, Offerman, figure out how best to love and be loved. Top sports stories. The top three were, update, ex-Tuscola star needs healing time. That was number one. Number two, DJ Williams to transfer. Three, Smith suspends three Illini. The three top videos were one, Representative Rodney Davis meets constituents. Two, Champaign's new crime scene van. And three, Hill, I had fun with it. And the three top photo galleries were one, Tom Petty and Joe Walsh at State Farm Center. Two, Illinois graduates. And three, 1A soccer regional, STM, St. Thomas More, versus BCC. And now, history. Area history. In 1917, President Edmund James of the University of Illinois proposed to the French and Belgian governments that units of American engineers and architects be sent to Europe after the Germans were driven out to aid in rebuilding cities destroyed by shell fire. A summer course of city planning was to open at the U of I on July 1st. In 1967, three architectural firms with experience and awards in school design were appointed to design the new campus of the District 505 Community College. Ernest J. Kump, KUMP, a nationally known designer of community colleges from California, was selected to form an association with local architectural firms Richardson, Severns, Sheeler & Associates, and Berger, Kelly, Unteed, Skaggs, and Associates. In 2002, the popular Elite Diner in Urbana was to serve its last dinner in mid-July after 19 years at its home at 210 East Elm Street, said owner Eric Faulkner. The diner was possibly headed to Homer. It had been moved before. It was for many years home to the Chuck Wagon Restaurant in Champaign before moving to Villa Grove in the 1970s and to Urbana in 1983. And in international history, today's highlight. On May 16, 1868, the U.S. Senate failed by one vote to convict President Andrew Johnson as it took its first ballot on the 11 articles of impeachment against him. And now I'll take a moment to give you our weather forecast. This is provided to us by Greg Soul, so that's S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. Looks like we have a nice few days ahead. Today, 87 degrees, mostly sunny overnight, partly cloudy. Wednesday, a high of 86, a low of 65. Partly sunny, south wind increasing to 20 to 30 miles per hour and gusty. Overnight, an isolated shower and thunderstorm. Thursday, the high is 85, the low is 66. Increasing clouds, a shower and thunderstorm in spots late. Friday, the high will be 77 degrees, the low will be 59. Partly sunny, a couple of showers and thunderstorms in spots before noon and late. And Saturday, the high will be 76 and the low will be 59, mostly cloudy, occasional showers and thunderstorms before noon and in the afternoon. The next headline reads, University of Illinois, UI Engineering pairs with UAE University. This article is written by Julie Worth and is based out of Urbana. Expanding its global ties in the Middle East, the University of Illinois has signed a new program with an 8-year-old university in the United Arab Emirates that would allow students to get a bachelor's degree from that school and a master's from Illinois. The university signed a memorandum of understanding with the American University of Ras Al Khaimah, that's Khaimah, a school founded in 2009 and styled after U.S. universities. The agreement was initiated by the American University of Ras Al Khaimah's School of Engineering and the U of I's highly selective Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering. It will create a 3+2 cooperative program in which students can spend 3 years at the UAE school and 2 at the U of I, earning both a bachelor's and master's degree in 5 years. The 5-year agreement was signed by U of I Chancellor Robert Jones, College of Engineering Dean Andreas Cangellaris, that's Cangellaris, and Rudametse, that's Reitumetse, Mabokela, Vice Provost for International Affairs and Global Strategies, as well as officials from the UAE, an oil-rich nation of about 9.3 million people. A maximum of 5 students will be admitted to the program each year, contingent on the number of qualified applicants and spaces available, according to the agreement. They must meet all of the U of I Civil Engineering Department's admissions requirements. Students will pay the full cost of attendance at the U of I. Tuition for engineering graduate students from other countries is more than $34,000 a year, plus an estimated $11,000 in fees, housing, and other costs, according to the U of I's website. 400 agreements abroad. The U of I has more than 400 agreements with universities outside the United States for student exchanges, study abroad opportunities, cooperative faculty research arrangements, and other partnerships, Mabokela said. But there are only a few 3+2 agreements, including with several universities in China. As with other cooperative agreements, these provide an opportunity for students in other parts of the world, other countries, to study at the University of Illinois, and sometimes down the road they also provide opportunities for our own students, she said. The UAE Memorandum of Understanding includes that possibility, she said. Asked how the agreement fulfills the U of I's land-grant mission, Mabokela said that the mission includes research, teaching, and public service. International agreements give professors and students a way to study or engage in research with colleagues around the world, she said. We are a land-grant university. We are also a global university, she said. Mabokela said the income generated by the international students is relatively modest given the small number of students involved. But she said it's a way to provide experiences for students and faculty in an area where the U of I has few existing partnerships. The university does have a broader agreement with one other UAE school, Abu Dhabi University, but it's not a 3+2 program, which are usually arranged by specific departments, she said. U of I and the Middle East. In the Middle East, our engagement is modest relative to other areas, she said, with 2 in Israel, 2 in Jordan, and 1 each in Egypt, Lebanon, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Tunisia. By comparison, there are 30 agreements with universities in China and 12 in India, she said. The UAE school is small with fewer than 1,000 students and about 78 faculty, according to ratings websites. It was initially established in 2005 as a campus of George Mason University, but George Mason later discontinued its operations there and the school was reconstituted, in 2009 as the American University of Ras Al Khaimah, one of 7 emirates that make up the United Arab Emirates. The university's president has since instituted major changes, increasing enrollment, developing new academic programs, and hiring more faculty and staff, according to the school's website. It now has a School of Arts and Sciences, School of Engineering, School of Business, and School of Graduate Studies and Research. Its 22 academic programs are accredited by the UAE Government's Commission for Academic Accreditation, and the school is seeking accreditation from the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges, a regional body for accreditation of college and universities in the United States. Last August, 2 bachelor's degree programs in the School of Engineering, Computer Engineering and Electronics Communication, won accreditation from the Accreditation Board for Engineering and Technology. Mabokela said It's not unusual for universities outside the U.S. to be accredited in their home countries and not in the United States. New universities are cropping up around the world, typically staffed by professors who were educated in the West and want to create similar institutions back home, she said. There's an emerging cadre of institutions that 5 or 10 years ago did not exist, but have the potential to be fairly strong universities because they have faculty members that effectively we've trained, she said. The UAE University has other international partners in Africa, Asia, Europe, and North America, including exchange and study abroad programs, according to a release. The school also takes in students from the U.S. and Europe each semester. The next headline reads, Drug Epidemic, Illinois Health Centers Tackle Opioid Scourge. This is out of Bloomington and is written by the Associated Press. Law enforcement agencies and health centers in central Illinois are scrambling to address the opioid epidemic. DeWitt County Sheriff Jared, that's J-E-R-E-D, Schaffner, S-H-O-F-N-E-R, tells the Pantograph newspaper that heroin is the area's top public safety threat. Schaffner's office is among six agencies that make up the Illinois State Police Task Force 6 Narcotics Unit. McLean County Sheriff John Sandage, that's J-O-N, last name Sandage, S-A-N-D-A-G-E, says public education is key to fighting the surge of cases involving prescription drugs, which he says can be a path to heroin. A Bloomington mental health crisis and detox center had to turn away 70 people with addictions in March, a recurring dilemma for the 14-bed facility. Chestnut Health Systems is in the process of adding 8 more beds to its crisis stabilization center for people experiencing a mental health or drug-related crisis. And now, Marcus Jackson's weekly Q&A with a mover and shaker, MJ's Minute with Jane DeLuce. That's Jane, J-A-Y-N-E, DeLuce, D-E-L-U-C-E. Since moving back to the area in 1996 after helping organize the Olympic Games in Atlanta for 4 years, Jane DeLuce has had her hands all over community endeavors, from working with the U of I Alumni Association to her role in campus recreation. For the past 7 years, DeLuce has been with Visit Champaign County, the local tourism bureau, where she serves as president and CEO. We have an awesome team, DeLuce said, of Visit Champaign County, which will move to a new location at 17 Taylor Street in downtown Champaign in July. The Champaign Central and U of I grad visited with our Marcus Jackson to talk about the recent busy stretch for Visit Champaign County, as well as the reason behind moving to a new spot. To view the video of our full conversation, go to newsgazette.com. Here's a question for Jane. Did you listen to your dad, Jim Turpin, on the radio growing up? Oh, yeah. When you're in Springfield, we didn't have as much internet coming over, but I listen to him as much as I can, and I still try to listen to him as much as I can on the radio, but usually through podcasts, because I'm in meetings between 9 to 11 when he's on the air. If you'd like to join Marcus Jackson for a chat in our downtown offices, drop him a note on Twitter. His handle is Marcus J, that's M-A-R-C-U-S-J _NG, or send him an email at mjackson@newsgazette.com. That's M-J-A-C-K-S-O-N @newsgazette.com. And our last brief article headline is Champaign County Highway Department, 4 miles of Monticello Road to close. Beginning approximately June 1st, a 4-mile segment of Monticello Road in southwest Champaign County will be closed to traffic for several months. 2 bridges on the road will be replaced this summer, from 2 miles west of Interstate 57 at the Kaskaskia Ditch to 5 miles west of I-57. There will be no marked detour, according to the Champaign County Highway Department. The bridge replacements are scheduled to be completed by November 1st. That article was collectively written by the News Gazette. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. We'll resume with part two shortly, so please stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you have a wonderful day.